All right, I am Haggai Davis III, along with Haggai Davis II, and we'd like to welcome you to Tech Gumbo. Our show is a conversation about the past, present, and future of all things technology that we like to keep topical, interesting, and digestible. We want to thank our sponsor, Cardinal Capital, for making this possible. Cardinal Capital connects businesses to capital. It doesn't matter what business that you are in, Cardinal Capital has the resources all across the United States that are willing to help fund organizations of all sizes, life cycles, categories, and locations. Cardinal Capital works with you to craft the best commercial finance package for you to achieve your business goals. Whether you're looking to refinance current debt because of the new government programs and favorable interest rates, or finance new equipment, or maybe you're trying to acquire another business entirely, Cardinal Capital has the resources to make it happen. When lenders cannot do a loan, they seek out Cardinal Capital to help. The Cardinal Capital guys are easy to work with and fun to be around. Contact them today at 225-308-3700 or send them an email at info@cardinalcap.net, and they'll be happy to help you with your commercial finance needs.
So instead of a question of the week, we're going to do another interview, and this time we're going to have Ibrahim Abe Baghili. He's a PhD professor of computer science and cybersecurity at Louisiana State University and a returning guest. Abe, welcome back to Tech Gumbo.
Hi, it's nice to be back. It's been a while.
Things have been going on. I know you and your research students have been involved in a whole lot of big projects. Why don't you tell us, give a little bit of an update of what's been going on?
Yeah, I mean, we've had some very interesting things happen since we last spoke. I think at one point we're talking about the virtual reality security and how we could hack people into moving from one location to another. And then we scored a really nice DARPA grant to look at mixed reality deception. And that's been one of the biggest things we've been working on, but we have other projects too that we're looking at, all the way from looking at your insurance apps and figuring out if we can detect if there was a hit and run, to looking at your Roomba to see what it can see in your house and how it can help you solve a crime and maybe be an alibi. So there's a lot that we're doing, and I'd be happy to talk about any of these things if you'd like us to do so.
It sounds like, you know, a lot of the recurring themes are looking at pieces of hardware or pieces of software that are common in our daily life, and understanding what data they are collecting specifically, and then how can we learn what that data is telling us more broadly. You said that one of the things you're looking at is mixed reality devices. Are you considering the new Apple Vision Pro? That this is a device which is surely collecting a tremendous amount of data. I would be fascinated to know what can Apple start to piece together from user sessions.
Yeah, so actually we are currently using the Magic Leap in our studies. We are considering using the Apple Vision Pro, but unfortunately, one thing that Apple did that there's two things I think that Apple did that make it potentially difficult for researchers to use it, right? The first is they've designed it in such a way where it has to fit one person's head, which might not be very good for studies. If you're running 250 people, every person is going to have a different head and different configuration. So that's kind of not great for research purposes. And then the other thing is, I don't know if you've looked deeply into the Vision Pro, it's not a true augmented reality system, right? So it's a pass-through system. So it actually has cameras. It's apparently the best one in the world, but still it's cameras that are feeding the information to you. So actually all the information you see is digitized and it's not, you know, analog. Whereas the Magic Leap, you have the analog signal like a normal glass and it's projecting things so that you see, you know, a 3D objects and so on in front of you. So yeah, we're very interested in the Vision Pro and systems like it, and we actually have some very interesting ideas that we're going to explore in other phases of our project in terms of how we can deceive people and how we can make objects potentially look real when they're not, and what that could do to humans. And I, you know, if you'd like me to talk more about that, I can, but I'm going to let you guys ask some questions so that I can, you know, we can have a conversation here.
I think that's such an interesting line of topics to pursue. I was listening recently to an interview. The tech reporter, I think at the Wall Street Journal, did a 1 month follow-up on her usage of the Apple Vision Pro. And she said that whenever she first put it on, she did it for about 24 hours straight, I think she said. And so she said, like, whenever she finally took it off, it messed with her head a little bit, and that, like, her expectation of like where apps were and like what apps should be there was like kind of altering her sense of reality. And so I think that as people start to get more comfortable with these things, they start to become more common in life. If you're already expecting something to be there, it seems even easier to deceive people into that type of false object or manipulating them in different ways.
We created a first of its kind, what's called an ontology of different types of attacks that could happen in mixed reality. So you can think of it as a large tree of different attacks, right? And what we did is we went after something. There's something called information theory, right? And an information theoretic model takes into account, you know, a signal. Electrical engineers love these terms, and you know, there's it's called Shannon's model, so to speak, of communication. And it's all about having a sender and a receiver and a message that's being sent from the sender to the receiver. So everything that we, you know, do in terms of our daily lives on the internet is actually modeled after this model, right? You're right now, we're communicating, and I'm sending a signal from my computer to yours, and you're sending a signal from your computer to mine. Now what happens in between is kind of
magical,
right? Let's just put it at that. But there's different kinds of high level attacks that we can start to explore, right? According to the information theoretic model, there's two major types of attacks that we can consider from a high level perspective. There's channel attacks, right? So the channel would be like how we're communicating right now over the internet, and Zoom could be the channel, or Teams could be the channel, or Facebook could be a channel, right? And then we have a processing attack, and in the processing attack, we're really targeting how you think, your cognitive process, right? And then under those, there's all sorts of different kinds of attacks that we could go, you know, use. But I think what's really interesting is, even though this is a high-level model and applies to any channel and any attack surface, the interesting thing is when you're in mixed reality or when you're in virtual reality, like, you're in a different world, right? Partially, at least, or sometimes fully. So your reality is distorted. And it's not just about, you know, hey, I sent you a fake email. It's more like, hey, like this thing, this person that you're talking to might be completely not real, right? And the actions that you take and your hand movements and your head movement and the location that you're standing in all are affected by these deceptions.
So Abe, you'd mentioned the forensic analysis of the Roomba. I mean, as somebody who has a Roomba with one of those cameras running around my house, it's mapped out the floor. How concerned should I be about it?
I mean, you know, make sure it doesn't go into the bathroom when you're doing your business, right? Because those pictures might be sent out to the cloud, right? That's the reality. And I think there was a case where that has happened, where some lady found her pictures, you know, somehow sent over the internet because of the Roomba.
She was in South America. Yes.
So something along those lines. We have a paper, and the paper is called So Fresh and So Clean, Cloud Forensic Analysis of the Amazon iRobot Roomba Vacuum. And it's really interesting because these devices, and I do want to give credit to my students, you know, Abdur, he's kind of the lead author, and Ruba is the second author, and myself and my colleague Andrew Webb all worked on this paper. But, you know, there's a huge amount of penetration of these devices, and specifically the Roomba has, like, I think 78% of the market share last I checked. When you talk about these devices and their widespread usage, I mean, you said you have one, I have one. It becomes interesting for us to understand, what are these devices collecting? What we try to do is understand how the app communicates with their servers. And based on that, there's the APIs, if we can understand them, then we can start logging in using our credentials, right? Not looking at everybody's data, just our specific data, and see what are these devices actually collecting. Once we did that, we created a tool, and the tool now can kind of show us all sorts of things, all the way from the maps around your house to the kind of things that the app can detect without you knowing that it detects. So let me give you some examples, right? Like, you know, the app can, you know, the Roomba can detect shoes, it can detect fabric bags, it can detect socks, it can detect cloth, it can detect floor and carpets, cleaned areas, it can detect if it's a fridge, if it's a cabinet, if it's an oven, if it's a table, and of course the Docker positions and things like that, which you know through the app that it does. So through some And I'm assuming what they're doing is once the picture is taken, right, they send it to their servers and they have some sort of machine learning sort of classifier saying that, hey, this is a picture, this is, you know, a shoe or this is fabric. It's great that it can do this. In the app, you can't see all of these things. In our app, you can see all these things. But for us, it was really a forensic investigation. What does that mean? Well, there have been cases, for example, where somebody died and they found them on the street and they found out who killed them and what time they were killed based on their Fitbit, right? Because the Fitbit can detect your heartbeat, right? So the question is, can the Roomba be your alibi? And what my student worked hard and he put it in his apartment and laid on the ground for an hour and ran it with like a knife next to him. And then we tried to see if the Roomba can really tell you to some degree if there's a body on the ground, at what time it detected it, if there's a knife. And you can very clearly see from the map that, yeah, there's kind of a shape of a body because it kind of pinpoints all of these things and it detects an object. It couldn't tell us that it's a knife, but it definitely detected an object, right? And that data could be very useful in a forensic investigation because you might rule the time of death at this time, but it's like, no, the data is showing us the body was there at this time, right? A great example of that everybody talks about is the O.J. Simpson case, right? Like the O.J. Simpson case was a case where a lot of things were moved around and you can see from different pictures that, you know, certain evidence was moved. And in forensics, that's not good. You really don't want to tamper with the evidence until you have a real understanding of the crime scene, right? But these are the sort of things that a Roomba can tell you from a forensics perspective, which I find fascinating.
So then you said that the processing, like wherever the Roomba detects what it is, that happens server side, and the server sends back what the object classification is. And then so
that's what I think is happening. Now, we can just tell that it detected a cloth or detected a cable or detected a shoe based on the data they're storing. Because if you have one of those Roombas, a lot of times you'd log in. It's like, I bumped into something and here's a picture of it. Right? That picture is really what they're most likely using to classify things. And more than likely, it's happening server side. I think the interesting thing is that you can't really see, like as a user, as an end user, you don't know that it's detecting these things, right? You just know that, hey, the Roomba ran and it stopped. And here's a picture of where it stopped, right? Like, but you don't really fully understand the scope of the information that they're trying to make or create and the knowledge they're trying to create from these things. Because, I mean, think about, like, the way I was thinking about it is, like, from a marketing perspective, now I'm inside your house, right? And I can tell that your house has a lot of wires because it constantly finds wires. Maybe it finds socks. Everyone's going to, like, every Roomba's going to find socks, right? But, like, wires and electronic devices and things like that. So maybe I can target you now with ads about, you know, electronic devices, and you'll probably be my target audience. You might be the target audience just because you own a Roomba in the first place. But, you know, the point is, I think that's the kind of stuff that maybe they could use from a marketing perspective. They can even detect pet waste, for example. So it's detected pet waste. So now I know you have a pet. So now I can hit you with marketing about, you know, your cat and your dog food and all sorts of things like that too.
How much should we as users get to know what these companies are collecting about us and what they're inferring about us? Do we have a right to know that what they are collecting? Should we have a right to know what they are inferring? How much is fair for them to say that, like, that is their secret sauce, that is their, you know, their business, they're private, that's where they make their money, that they can do that, versus how much, you know, should we say that this is my data that you're collecting, I should get to know some portion of it?
I honestly don't know the answer to that, because I was looking at this as a positive thing. Like, you know, I know it's a negative thing from, like, sort of a privacy perspective, but I was looking at it as like, hey, you got a dead body in a house. You got access to this data potentially. How do you gain access to it? And how can you verify it? And how can you use it to investigate the case? I mean, your question really threads on privacy, which I kind of try to stay away from as much as possible, because I don't try to stay away from it. Actually, my dissertation kind of focused on that a little bit. But even, you know, back when I did my dissertation and I graduated in 2009, it was very clear to me that people were kind of blurring the line of what's okay with people. Just like, they're kind of okay with everything at this point in time, right? Like, and you don't even have to ask people to like have a Roomba in their house. Like, they just share it on TikTok, You know, like, so I think we're kind of in that world where people kind of feel that they're not private anymore and they don't care. Many of the new generations, I don't think they really care that much.
I think that's such an interesting way to model it from a decision-making standpoint, that most people begin with the assumption that they don't have privacy. And so then communicating the benefits around the positive version of it, that here's how we can use this to solve crime. Here's how we can use this to detect other things, that the data is there. It is being collected and we're not going to put the toothpaste back in the tube. What can we do with it, therefore? I think that's a fascinating way to approach this problem.
Yeah, we a long time ago here on the show, we used to use the phrase, the delusion of privacy ended with the beginning of Google. With all the things that these social media giants collect on us, there is no more privacy.
You know, in my field, we're really, I always show like a slide to my students where I'm like, you know that scene in The Lion King where he sits down his son and he's like, everything the light touches is our kingdom. And I take that same scene and I just slash out the word light touches and I put data, right? Everything that data touches is our kingdom, right? And that's kind of how I feel about digital forensics. It's like, if you can find the data to kind of show what happened, where it happened, how it happened, why it happened, who did it, right? That's always kind of what we're trying to go after. And that happens because of data at the end of the day.
What have been the most fascinating and most interesting use cases? You talked about the Roomba. Are there some other places where you've been able to, you know, find data from a common collector and apply it in some way?
Yeah, I wish I could show you guys this video right now because my students just did another paper and it's called Hit and Run. By the way, a lot of our papers, they start with the name of a song. So you might want to go put it in YouTube and find out what the song is. So vehicle event reconstruction through driver-based cloud data from Progressive Snapshot app. And in this work, we were really trying to get at like, how accurate is the data collected from this device, from like the Snapshot app that's on your device. And you know, these are the apps that people use nowadays so that they can decrease their insurance. You know, if they drive well, the app can detect that they drive well and hopefully your insurance price goes down, right? So what you're really doing is you're enabling insurance companies to collect a lot of information about your driving. That's fantastic for them. It's also fantastic for us because if you get into a car crash, like, can we actually get this data from this app and figure out whose fault is it? Or when was the last time you broke? And so on and so forth. So we went ahead and did something very similar to understand how this app collects the data and what kind of app data it collects. And we even did a case study where the students bought a mannequin from Amazon and they ran it over with a car, which was fun. But also, like, I realized why insurance prices are very high in Louisiana because my students aren't great drivers. And they literally ran. Not only did they, that's why I wish I had a video to show you, because I mean, I do have the video, but maybe I'll show it to you after this conversation. They hit the mannequin and then the mannequin fell and then they ran it over with the tires. Right. And like, why did you have to do that? Like that, there was no need to do that, but they still did it. And then you could actually replicate the entire scene based on the data that we were able to get from the Progressive app. And that was really cool. And it's, again, another use case where this data was useful. One cool thing that maybe I want to mention quickly is the app can detect whether you're the driver or the passenger with a high degree of accuracy, right? To the point where one of my students went into a car where the steering was on the right-hand side, right? And it's still, and then he sat in the passenger seat, that was his friend's car, and it still detected that he was the passenger and not the driver, right? So they are doing it in some sort of a cool way.
That's so fascinating that I wouldn't even think that you could be able to tell the difference. I would have guessed, oh, maybe it can guess the side of the car that you get into on, but the fact that it can know if you're the passenger or the driver, regardless of the side of the car that you're on, that's so fascinating that even is detectable.
Finite motion that you've got to be holding the phone. And if it's not sensing you're going up and down in your hand like you've got it on a steering wheel, you must not be driving. Is that how it's picking this up?
I have no idea. Like I didn't, we don't know that information. We just know that it does this, right? It could be that it's using the gyroscope data because maybe on the driver's side, it jiggles more. I have no idea. I honestly don't know. but it was able to do it. And, you know, it detects phone usage and calls. It detects distractions. If you get distracted by looking at your phone, it will detect that. It will detect speeding. It will detect acceleration. It will detect hard brakes. It will detect endpoints and start points. And you could see the map very well. One cool thing that we did, too, is because we're crazy about forensics, is we did anti-forensics where we spoofed the GPS location of the device using another app. And in the app itself, in the Progressive app, it's like, okay, we were in Baton Rouge and all of a sudden we were in New York, right? Which doesn't make sense. But when we downloaded the app data from their servers, they collected the right data. So I thought that was very interesting, is they're able to somehow on their server side be like, this data is not good, but this data is good.
Abe, once again, thank you for spending some time with us here on Tech Gumbo, and look forward to having you back sometime in the future.
Well, thank you.
And we want to thank General Informatics for sponsoring our show. General Informatics is an information technology firm with a mission. And that mission is to make our clients even more successful through the best use of technology. General Informatics is a premier IT managed services provider, delivering exceptional managed IT solutions to a diverse base of customers. GI has evolved to become the leading IT partner of businesses, schools, and government agencies. Our managed services teams can run your digital infrastructure or support your team on an on-demand basis, letting you focus on your business's strength. This has become a proven formula, so proven that 98% of our clients continue to do business with us year after year. Whether you need new IT services, new technology, or you just have a question, visit us on the web at geninf.com. And if you enjoyed our show today, we're here on Talk 107.3 FM every Saturday at 4, and the show will rerun Sunday at 4. If you missed any part of our show, or you would like to hear any of the previous episodes, check out our podcast, which is available on most every platform. And when you're there, be sure to subscribe so you'll be notified every time a new episode is posted. If you like our show, if you have some suggestions or want to submit a question, let us know by visiting our website, techgumbo.net. Thank you for listening to Tech Gumbo.